This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. 97.1 FM Talk.
On-demand audio.
Kim on a whim.
Usually if you hear about somebody graduating with honors, getting a scholarship to a great university, it's fair to assume that that person is likely above average in just about every subject. Would
Should
you agree
be.
With that? Should be.
I would think that's the goal, right? You're awarding them, rewarding them for something.
Right. There's a 19-year-old who graduated with honors from Hartford Public High School in Connecticut. Her name is Alicia Ortez. Well, she got a scholarship to UConn, which is very exciting, but now she's suing her school district because turns out after 12 years of public education, Mark, she can't read or write.
What?
Cannot read or write. Not from the United States initially. Mother brought her over when she was young, I believe. And you're thinking right now, as I was, well, how did she get through class? Listen, there's a report, and this reporter is talking with this girl. Listen to this.
President Zelensky said,
when she was in early education,
they would just either tell me to sit in a corner and sleep, or just draw pictures, flowers for them.
And when she was in high school, she relied on speech-to-text programs and other apps to read and write essays.
Is that not nuts? So, and there's, I didn't want to play the audio because when you're listening to it, obviously you see the video. And so they're saying, oh, look at this, check this out. And so it's not the best for radio. But basically, that's what she would do is there are apps that I didn't even know about where if I held it over something, it would essentially scan a picture of it and then it would read to me what it says. And same for her. She would just voice what she wanted for, say, a paper that she had to write for one of her classes, and then that would type it up, you know, it would put it out there for her, and she would turn that in, and somehow that was enough. And this girl, because the question, of course, you should ask is, well, is this really the girl's fault because she should have spoken up about it, or was it on the teachers? Well, this girl says, my mom went to the school multiple times and expressed concern about my lack of ability to read or write and basically was dismissed. How do you graduate with honors if you can't read or write?
So I have a few questions here. Number one, what responsibility does the mother play in all of this upon learning at some point that her child can't read or write? Instead, she's... Now, the school has most of the blame here, but at some point the parent goes and gets the child some tutoring or something and assumes there must be a problem if you've gotten to your senior year in high school and you can't read or write, right?
Yes.
So some responsibility has to fall on the mom's shoulders.
I agree.
Number two, I have a family member who used to teach in a couple of local districts. And told me many years ago, probably 15 years ago in one district she worked in, that problem children would just be pushed on to the next grade. Whether they passed the requirements for the reading level of that grade or not, the teachers didn't want to deal with them, and they just pushed them on through to the next grade. It was the unwritten policy in their district at the time to basically do this. Nobody talked about it, but how many of those kids ended up graduating and couldn't read or write at a fourth grade level? I mean, it's amazing.
It's terrible. The mom of this girl apparently doesn't speak much English. She's originally from Puerto Rico. But I agree with you that I think that some of the responsibility falls onto the mom. I don't know what her financial situation was, if she couldn't afford a tutor, but certainly there would be some way to set that up. If it's a public school district, wouldn't there be a tutor included where if she needed the extra help, they would have had access to those resources?
Yeah, and, you know, she said they told her to go sit in a corner. There is no way that we have to assume 15 or 20 teachers over the course of her career there didn't realize that she had a problem. I mean, how is that a thing?
I don't know, because nowadays they have that ESL, which is English as a second language, and so there's special attention given to those students who their native tongue is not English, and help them, I assume,
but
specifically with reading and writing.
Language.
She can,
she
as you heard her, yeah, you can absolutely understand her. And it's really sad. I mean, you talk about the reading levels, and you and I have discussed this on the show, Mark, about here in Missouri, the reading skills have continued to drop. And this is not just from COVID. It certainly did not help. There was probably a drastic drop from COVID, but this has been a downward trend for years. Listen to this. So this is an article that came out this year, January of this year. It says in Missouri, 27% of fourth grade students and 26% of eighth grade students scored proficient and above, which means they've mastered essential reading skills. That's down from more than 33% in 2019. But still, only 33% have essential reading skills for fourth grade and eighth grade? This isn't some above and beyond, like you're writing poetry and you're, you know, this is just, they're saying mastered essential reading skills.
This is why you need competition for your public schools. And every teacher that's listening to the sound of my voice this morning knows that is the God's honest truth. There is no accountability in these public schools in many cases. And if with a wink and a nod, somebody like this can get pushed through 12 grades and nobody cared enough to single that student out and help, you know that's part of the problem. If that mother at some point had the opportunity to take her child and put her in a different school with different standards, then eventually the enrollment would dwindle to the point that they would have to fix the system. Right now, there's zero pressure on the public schools to fix the system.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody attends the school board meetings. The teachers' unions only care about the next raise in many cases, and they're the ones electing people to the school boards, which we have a big election coming up in April.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to have more of those candidates on in the next coming weeks. But there's a lack of interest mm-hmm. in what's going on inside of the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Lack of attention to detail.
I wholeheartedly agree. People don't understand the importance of some of these smaller elections, the ripple effect that this can have if you're not actually showing up to the polls and deciding who's going to sit on these school boards. You know, the article I'm referring to right now and the news story I played for you earlier talks about the racial disparities and how women are more likely to have, you know, not as high of reading and writing skills. And this article, which, by the way, I should mention, is NPR. That tells you everything you need to know.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
But this, well, I trust the statistics as far as like only 22% and 37%. But then listen to this. It says racial disparities also persist for math and reading scores. In fourth grade reading, Black students in Missouri scored 32 points lower than white students. Hispanic students scored 18 points lower. Economically disadvantaged students scored 29% lower than their peers who were not disadvantaged. Now, I don't know how they determined if you're not disadvantaged. I guess if you're white, I guess that's their line right there.
Economic disadvantage, it's because of the color of your
skin.
It
must be. It seems like that might be it. I'm not really sure how they go about that.
This is the thing that sticks in my craw about the people on the left side of the political spectrum who are opposed to vouchers, who are opposed to letting you port your education money to the place where your child can get the best education. The people impacted by that the most are the ones you claim to care about the most, which are the poor and disadvantaged. They're trapped in school districts if they don't have the economic means to change addresses and move to a different district. That's where their disadvantage is. And it will follow that child the rest of their life. And yet, you're too tied up in your union membership or whatever it happens to be to not want to allow those tax dollars to be ported.
Mm-hmm.
You could make the difference in the life of a child. A little bit of competition would make a sea change in the world of education.
I agree. Is there a big concern among teachers that they'll lose their jobs because they're worried that the schools'
numbers would drop?
Right, that they wouldn't have enough funding to basically stay open. Or they'd either have to drastically cut staff or just straight up close the school altogether.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it might be a little painful for a few years.
But pruning is a process that is necessary. Pruning is not something that's easy and enjoyable, but pruning is absolutely necessary if you want to advance. If you want to get better, you have to go through that painful process.
My mom was a teacher. A lot of my aunts, a lot of my friends are in education. I get that. I'm not saying we're trying to hurt. It's not about trying to hurt public schools. It's about trying to get their attention and get them back to focusing on what's important.
Mm-hmm.
Not pronouns, math and writing, reading, the basics that we've so moved away from that. It's a sad state of affairs. There's no doubt about that at all.
Get more at 971talk.com.
All right, Carl, what are you playing here?
This is the Bell Stars, Aiko Aiko.
You heard this one. Speak English anytime you want.
Well, it's Creole.
Oh.
Dixie Cups did this
nice.
As well.
I see.
This is from the movie Rain Man, Mark.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I love that movie.
It's when they're driving down the highway in the convertible.
Yeah. I did not remember that. Great movie, though. So here's the story I mentioned to you earlier. This happened up in New York. And, you know, good for the teenage girls of New York, Kim, who are willing to stand up to this nonsense, even if they're worthless politicians or not. A transgender-identifying male athlete, this is from Breitbart, won a 400-meter women's race in Staten Island, New York, Saturday, after two teenage girls dropped out of the competition. Camden Schreiner, who uses the name Sadie, but is a fully functioning male, came in first place in the women's 400-meter dash at the USA Track and Field Open Masters Championships with a time of 56.74, according to The Blaze. Schreiner won the race after his opponents, Anna Vidova, 17, and Amaris Hyatt, 16, chose not to compete.
Did you see what happened, though? So this guy, Sadie, is 21 years old, and he goes on to compete in the 200-meter dash and, like you said, won first place over four teenagers. The ages of the people he beat, the girls, 14, 16, 15, and 18. So essentially a college-aged man competed against somebody, girls, as young as 14 years old and won first place and somehow feels really good about that. Like, that's a deserved title.
Wow. Let's see. As Breitbart News Warner Todd Houston reported in December of 2023, Schreiner, who began using the name Sadie, claimed that he was transgender while studying at Rochester Institute of Technology and began breaking women's records. In February of that year, RIT revealed Sadie would not be competing for the school after the NCAA changed its rules, but was still able to go and compete in this event.
And it says it's because, so this is the USA Track and Field Open Masters Championship, I guess. And it says that they allow transgenders to compete in women's events because it's under the International Olympic Committee's rules. And that's why there's some, I guess, there's a loophole.
So the next Olympic is going to come to the United States, correct, in 2 years?
L.A.?
Isn't it in L.A.?
Is it
when Trump's still in office?
I thought it was, yeah, a couple years in L.A.
28.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. So Trump will still be president when that Olympics takes place.
Yes, because it'll be in August in the election.
There's no way he's going to allow the IOC to compete under those rules here. So I see a conflict. coming.
Okay, well, I would agree with you, except is there a chance that the Olympic Committee would somehow move it? If Trump says that you're not going to have men competing with women, would they move it out of the United States to a country where they would allow that?
Well,
would
I mean,
it be that big of an issue?
They've got 3 years to make that decision, I guess. I mean, LA's already been planning all of this and building venues.
That means nothing, though.
Well, I'm just saying they've got to find somewhere else to hold it if they do it somewhere else.
Yeah.
Because it's a, you know, it was a big event.
Go back to Paris where it was a woke
I just don't know if it's a mental illness or what. For anyone to think it's okay for a male who's gone through puberty to go on an athletic field and compete against a female. Why? Why does anyone think that's okay? As a father of two daughters, that's not okay.
It's equity because they look at that man as a woman. They like if I watch a lot of the Charlie Kirk college debates, you know, where he challenges and, you know, they'll say to him, well, what is a woman? And he has a very clear answer. And then when he says the same question back, they don't have a definition. It's how you feel. Well, then what about how you feel makes you a woman? Well, it's just, do you feel feminine? Well, what is femininity? They're using the word to describe it. So if they're never actually giving a definition.
My response would be, are you stupid? You can think you're a German Shepherd all you want, but you can't make me think that. I just don't know why anybody in their right mind would think that's okay. If you want to call yourself that, that's fine. If you want to go on an athletic field and compete against girls, it's not okay.
I'm pretty sure I saw a furry, by the way, at a park yesterday. She had a tail on. And a
fit. Oh, my.
Yeah. And paw-looking things.
There are some sick and twisted people out there, I'm telling you, folks. Coming up, we're going to get to one person who's not, who toes the line, stands the line. That is former Senator John Lampen. Can't wait to get him on here. We'll be back in just a minute. Well, here's a bit of good news out of Rome. Reports just coming out a few minutes ago that Pope Francis has stabilized enough that they were able to take him off the respirator, I guess, or ventilator, and put him back on a nasal tube for oxygen as he continues his fight against pneumonia. The doctor's prognosis remained guarded, though, meaning he is not out of danger because of the copious amounts of, mucus he's got in his lungs from the pneumonia. But it is better news than it was yesterday when they had to put him on the ventilator just to be set on the safe side. You know, you pray for the best here. I don't know what's going to happen. I have seen stories that are already speculating on who might be among the next candidates if something happened to Pope Francis. We've got former Senator John Lampen on here with us this morning. John, how are you, sir?
Good morning, Mark. Kim, happy Fat Tuesday to you both.
Yes, happy Fat Tuesday on a rain-driven Tuesday morning downtown here for sure. So any thoughts on this? I know that Leo Burke's name popped up on the Fox 2 report that I read, but he'd be one of many cardinals under consideration, I imagine.
Yeah, there's a pretty relatively short list, maybe 10 at the most, the insiders have a sense of. Burke would be phenomenal. He represents the conservative wing. It'll be a real battle. You know, the cardinals, I'm of the opinion that the Pope is in his final days, given his health history and what we're hearing, you know, what you just reported suggests someone who's probably at the end of their lives. And we, you know, pray for the soul of the Pope. But this will be a critical moment for the Catholic Church. If I had the only vote, I'd probably vote for Cardinal Sarah. He's from Africa. The critical thing is going to happen here is that, you know, the Church has, Catholic Church in our faith has teaching authority. It's called the magisterium, and it has to do with the theology, the teachings that come from the Pope. This Pope has been particularly lacking in his theology in terms of he just hasn't really published all that much that's original thought, new ideas. And both Burke and Sarah are deep thinkers and would be a real glorious day. You'd see a huge wave of support amongst conservatives. Most people do realize that Catholics are, in this country, the largest identified faith, but unlike other parts of faith, there's tremendous enthusiasm amongst young people. There's the conversion rate, the number of young people that are embracing Catholicism. It's interesting that you see Trump's approval rating is highest amongst those under 30. And I would say that if we had a Cardinal Burke or a Cardinal Sarah, the enthusiasm for Catholics under 30 would be immense.
Well, and that being said, what are the odds that we actually do have a conservative Pope? Because, you know, it's been disappointing for me to see some of the stuff that Pope Francis has backed.
Oh, for sure. There's been a disappointment in so many ways, not least of which what I just suggested to you, that his theology has been lacking. Well, it would look on the surface to be kind of difficult. The way it works is I think there's 120 some odd cardinals, but only those cardinals that are under the age of 80 are allowed to vote. So a lot of the cardinals that are allowed to vote were actually put in place by this pope. And so we would think the odds would be in favor of continuing on along this vein. But I will tell you, I believe in the power of prayer, and there are Catholics all around this world that are praying for the soul of this pope, but they're praying for the cardinals to make the right decision and to choose someone whose teachings are far closer to what we believe to be the truth and the way.
Well, we'll hope that he continues to improve and pull out of this for now. John, let me switch gears. The city of St. Louis is voting today on a new mayor. I have my doubts on whether Kara Spencer would be much of an improvement in terms of city policies and the like. What I suggested earlier is that maybe, if anything, it would be a step away from some of the darker side of politics in St. Louis when it comes to, you know, Tishar Jones' connection to, you know, her father, Vervis, and others in the city. I mean, maybe that's why Kara Spencer has a better chance down here in the latest polling. You have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think what will happen today is we'll end up with the two of them, with Tishar and Kara, and I hope that Kara prevails. I think you're right. Tishar does represent, like, traditional St. Louis city politics, machine politics, whereas Kara's not originally from St. Louis, not that that makes a huge difference, but she's been in office for a while, but she doesn't really have the same trappings in her time in office. It is encouraging to see the business leaders that have coalesced around her. It's unusual for the business leaders to do that, to take out an incumbent. You know, obviously St. Louis City is not our part. It's not our city politically. It's a Democratic city. We just live there and work there. And I think the powers that be have gotten behind her. And I think they're going to prevail in the end. What's unfortunate, if she does win re-election, I don't know what message that sends to her other than to continue along this path. So I'm hopeful that Kara will come out on the other side and be our new mayor. And I do think there's the energy in the city, interestingly enough, it centers around some of the conservative Catholic areas, but it does also center around the rehab and renewal, kind of the south side of the city, young white professionals. And she represents a big part of that area, that there is growth. There is a lot of energy, and maybe we can somehow find a way out of the morass that we're in today in St. Louis City.
Yeah, maybe. You know, somebody called me the other day who will remain nameless and told me that this person said they've been hearing rumblings again about a city-county merger. Have you heard anything about that move making a comeback?
Yeah, well, it's inevitable that it will. The odds are more in the favor of the merger people than they were the last go around. The St. Louis City County in total keeps moving further and further to the left. As you know, we only have one state senator now in St. Louis County that's a Republican, and I think that the problems are so intense in the city and in the county. It's becoming more and more the same way, that that solution has been out there for a long time. They looked at Indianapolis and what they did 30 years ago now, and I think it's only a matter of time before that idea comes back. And it makes sense that it would come back once a new mayor is installed, and then to the extent that they can install a new county executive, I think that they recognize the fact that Sam Page would be problematic in an effort to merge the city and the county. No one wants to see Sam Page in charge of anything other than his household. And so I don't think you'll know about that fully until he's been replaced.
Interesting. Yeah, and you know, the same problems exist. My understanding is that they'll try to make a statewide vote run again instead of just allowing the city and county residents to vote on it. Although, to your point, as St. Louis County continues to move more to the left, they might be increasing their odds of even a local vote winning that, which is frightening.
Yeah, I mean, the fact of the matter is that the state is the one that decides where the county lines are drawn. So if you wanted to redraw Franklin County or redraw St. Charles County, the logic would suggest that St. Charles County and Franklin County would be the ones that decide that. The state is actually the one that decides, you know, what are the 113 counties and what are their borders and all that kind of stuff. Now, having said that, it's the rest of the state, the big parts of the rest of the state really don't like St. Louis. And if they had the sense that St. Louisans didn't like this idea, they'd probably be more in favor of it.
Yeah.
And then what happens with a ballot initiative of any type of ballot initiative is it's hard to raise money to support the status quo. So when someone wants to make a change to something, it's hard for the other side to say, well, we like what we have. We need to raise money to keep it. It just doesn't happen so easily. And we know that, you know, Rex Sinkfield in St. Louis is a big proponent of the merger, and he also has the capacity to fund the campaign. So I think it'll come back, but I'd be shocked if it came back with Sam Page still in office.
Interesting. John, we appreciate your time, my friend. Stay dry. Thank you.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
All right. Yep. John Lamping there, line for us. Boy, I hate to have to bring that stinger out again, Carl, but it actually is one of the favorite ones that we've ever used here on the Mark Cox Morning Show. Can you agree with that? We'll get that baby queued up, and I'll be glad to bring it back and fight against this thing with everything that I have, for sure. We'll get to that and more.
Wait.
Up. Wait.
This is your No Merger Minute.
That's sick. Those are corrupt bastards, Chris.
You need to get your head out of your butt, focus on the real issues.
But we have to pass the bill so that you can find out what is in it.
How about new?
Thank you. And it's still a solid no on that ridiculous idea of transferring the city's problems to county taxpayers. Stupidest idea ever. All right, we'll be back in just a minute with another news. Stay tuned.
What's happening?
Go, you know the thing.
What the hell is going on?
In other news.
It looks like Carl Thomas Dean, the husband of country music legend Dolly Parton, has passed away at the age of 82. Parton announced his death on social media, expressing gratitude for their 60-plus years of love. Mm. There's some life goals for you. He was a private man who avoided the spotlight. Dean supported Parton's career while managing real estate in their Nashville ranch. The couple married in 66 after meeting in Nashville in 64.
Wow. Is that the one Jolene tried to steal?
Yes.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Jolene's written about him.
What did Jolene look like is what I want to know, because Dolly Parton
teller.
Was... a knockout.
Yeah, right.
She had red hair. Well, here's what we know about Jolene. She had red hair, fiery red hair, and she was a bank teller.
Oh.
And really? I didn't know this.
And Dolly called her out. Like the way that she was looking at Carl.
Oh, Carl Dean. Yep, stay away. That's sad.
And he toured with her, but would never, like, she always threatened, I'll bring Carl out here, but he won't come.
Yeah.
There's so many songs that I will sing along to, and I don't really think about the lyrics and the meaning behind the lyrics. Is that not so sad? I mean, there's songs that sound really cheery, and then you look at the lyrics and you realize, oh my gosh, that's about like pumped
cheating.
Up kicks.
Steal my
about
man.
A school that's, shooting or drugs or in this case, a woman stealing her man. It's all kind of sad.
I don't think Jolene got away with it.
No.
That's good.
Jolene lost.
It looks like Jay-Z is suing an anonymous woman and her attorneys, alleging defamation, malicious prosecution, and extortion after she accused him of sexual assault in the since-dismissed lawsuit. The rapper's legal filing claims the woman admitted privately that he did not assault her and that her lawyer, Tony Busby, pushed her to make false allegations for financial gain. This is a follow-up to a story that we did a couple months ago where that lady was saying...
Yeah.
Jay-Z sexually assaulted her. He came back and...
So the court dismissed the case.
Right.
And now he's countersuing her. Man, he's got deep pockets. You got to... Mm-hmm. That's always
good
dangerous.
Luck with that.
Yeah, no kidding.
Adrian Brody made history at the Oscars with a record-breaking 5-minute, 37-second acceptance speech after winning Best Actor for The Brutalist. He surpassed Greer Grayson. His was in 1943, previously thought to be the longest at 5 minutes, 30 seconds. Despite being played off twice, Brody insisted on finishing, urging people to fight for what's right before wrapping up. So they tried to play him off twice, and he didn't leave.
What
so,
happens in that case? They eventually come get you if he were to continue,
nope.
And they keep turning the music up, and he doesn't go?
He didn't leave.
Don't they have just like a giant hook they could put
don't
around
like,
him and drag him off
like
the stage?
Like a button you push, and it's like a drop. Something the floor drops out from underneath you.
That'd be much more entertaining.
Yeah, it would be entertaining. I would
Sandman
support
comes
that.
Out with
the broom pushing you off. You think they would have just went to commercial?
They could
cut him off.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like
cut the mic.
Okay,
why couldn't they cut the mic?
They did
certainly
that.
Could.
What year did they do that? And then Billy Joel came out there and just ripped him apart during that song.
Probably the Grammys. Mm.
Yeah. Because he's like, oh, I'm wasting your precious ad time. And just sat there.
The whole show's a waste. Go ahead.
Jimmy Johnson, Hall of Fame coach and longtime Fox Sports analyst, announced his retirement from broadcasting at the age of 81. Johnson, who won 2 Super Bowls with the Dallas Cowboys and a college national championship at Miami, spent 25 years with Fox across 2 stints.
Those were the days for Cowboy fans, right? Now all the cheerleaders look like Jimmy Johnson from
wow.
that era.
Wow.
It's been a while.
Wow.
I'm just saying. All my
that
Cowboy fans
nowhere.
Keep hoping for another Super Bowl, but keeps getting further away.
And 2 quick ones. 7-time Grammy Award-winning artist Alanis Morissette has announced her first ever Las Vegas residency. It's going to take place at the Coliseum in Caesar Palace from October 15th to November 2nd. So if you're out in Las Vegas and want to see Alanis, get your tickets.
Yeah. Maybe if I'm there seeing Sammy Hagar, I'll pick up a couple
He's
tickets for that.
He's only doing
not.
9 shows.
I know. I'm sure they're all sold out already, probably. Too late for me, Carl.
All right.
Coming up, we'll get to Todd Pyro, host of Fox and Friends First, and our friend Mark Walters this morning from Armed American Radio in here on 2A Tuesday. Stay tuned.
Get more at 971talk.com.